Hello, this is Sharon bringing you the pantograph for today, Wednesday, August 12th, 2026. We'll begin our reading on the front page with an article entitled Election 2026, Illinois Governor. Pritzker and Bailey pitch to farmers. The future expansion of large-scale data centers and the status of efforts to make more Illinois farmers eligible for estate tax exemptions were among the topics Governor J.B. Pritzker and Republican challenger Darren Bailey addressed during a candidate forum. The two candidates, who also squared off in the 2022 election, visited Funk Farms Trust near Shirley at different times on Monday afternoon to take questions from the media and from the event's hosting organization, the Illinois Agricultural Legislative Roundtable. The event was moderated by Illinois Farm Bureau President Philip Nelson, who asked both candidates how they felt about raising the state's estate tax threshold for family farms. Illinois estate tax is regulated by the Illinois Attorney General's office and is paid out of all estates before their assets are transferred to the intended beneficiaries and heirs. The tax is graduated and can be as high as 16%. Under current law, taxes must be paid on the entire estate if it's valued above a $4 million threshold. In comparison, the federal estate tax, which is also paid by the deceased person's estate before assets can be distributed to the heir or beneficiary, currently has an exemption of $15 million per individual and $30 million per married couple. Recent bipartisan efforts have attempted to increase the state threshold to $6 million, but none has made it to the governor's desk. Opponents have questioned the potential loss of state revenue. Pritzker, who was in venture capital in Chicago for decades before beginning his political career, said he will support this legislation. "It's time for us to make sure that farmers are able to hand their farms down through the generations, as we have been over many generations up to now, and do it with less tax on that transfer," he said. Bailey proposed raising the threshold to the federal level to help preserve the future of farming, which he said seems to be disappearing every week. "How long do we continue to work and to build only when it comes time to give the government back way too much?" Bailey asked. "How long are we going to sit idly by and watch our property taxes continue to escalate out of control?" Bailey, a third-generation farmer born in Louisville who has served on the Illinois Senate since 2021 and previously served in the Illinois House, said he was notified of two generational farms in the area that were recently sold because the children didn't see a future in agriculture and were frustrated. The candidates also were invited to discuss data centers, which face criticism for straining water supplies and driving up demand and cost for electricity. Nelson said there were three centers surrounding his home, taking a total of 2,700 acres of farmland out of action. The General Assembly did not pass the Protection Our Water and Energy Resources Act during the spring session. This bill would have mandated the most water-efficient cooling methods and used closed-loop systems as a baseline. It also would have required data centers use at least 80% clean energy and 25% clean backup resources. Centers also would be forced to pay annual fees, depending on the facility's size, into a public fund for local utility bill assistance. Pritzker said smaller data centers were offered the opportunity to develop in Illinois around 2020, which was before hyperscale centers were first introduced. But when those larger projects came forward, Pritzker said he eliminated the tax credits and benefits available for those projects. Although Pritzker said the state needs to set some standard for large-scale projects that ensures that residents' power bills will not be affected, he also stated the local governments should make their own decisions about whether they want one. You have those decisions to make with zoning and other things when you have a new business that comes to your city, your township, or your county, Pritzker said. You should have that same decision-making ability with a data center that comes to you. Bailey said the state should not give billion-dollar companies massive tax incentives when all it does is force homeowners' taxes to go up. The state should insist that data centers provide their own energy and water, he added. Bailey also reiterated claims he made on social media that Pritzker benefited from a data center project in DeKalb through his blind trust. As a livestock producer, if I want to expand my operation, we have to have nutrient management plans, Bailey said. You've got to have setbacks. You've got to go through public hearings, and it seems like we're bypassing a lot of that as a race to who can sign their data center first. The bright side, anywhere brings rural Illinois story home. When Joe Garcia set out to make Anywhere, he wanted the short film to feel like something half remembered. The Hartsburg native and Central Illinois filmmaker had spent years returning to the coming-of-age story, which follows a high school senior in rural Illinois as she weighs college, money, class, and the possibility of leaving the only home she has ever known. Now, after crowdfunding, location scouting, shooting on 16mm film, and months of post-production, Anywhere is finished. The film will receive an advanced screening at 2 p.m. on Saturday, August 22nd at the Arlee Theater in Mason City as part of a double bill with the documentary A River of Blues. Tickets are $5 cash at the door or $6 online. Tickets include admission to an after party at Spirited Republic in Lincoln and a collectible film strip. Garcia said the screening gives local supporters one of the first chances to see the film before it continues through the festival submission process. This is the time to see it and see it in a local theater, Garcia said. We really fought for that. And especially before we do all the festival stuff, we wanted the people who crowdfunded it to see their story on the big screen. Anywhere is set in the early 2000s and follows the story of Lizzie Martin. On the surface, Garcia said, the film is about access to higher education. Beneath that is a broader story about class and circumstance. Class itself is like the most uniting factor in this country, yet it is what is used to divide us, Garcia said. People who are born into certain situations simply just can't sometimes overcome their circumstances, and that is a tragedy. The film was shot across several Central Illinois communities, including Lincoln, Hartsburg, Clinton, New Holland, and Middletown. Lincoln served as the production's home base, while the other locations were used to build the world around Lizzie. Garcia said the interior of Lizzie's home was filmed in Clinton, where the crew found a small, confined space that gave the scenes a claustrophobic feeling. The exterior was shot in Hartsburg, where Garcia grew up, because the house fit what he had imagined visually. Other locations included the Lincoln IGA, Elks Golf Course, the Hartsburg Post Office, and a country bridge near the Lincoln and Hartsburg area. Producer Zach Lucan, a Lincoln native, said making the film locally meant relying on relationships and community trust. A lot of it was just reaching out to local restaurants or local people that we knew, Lucan said. That's kind of the huge advantage I've always said about filming in a typical rural area. Lucan said local businesses and residents opened spaces to the production, including Spirited Republic, the Lincoln IGA, and an old schoolhouse near Emden. The fact that we are such a small community and people can trust you, I think that goes a long way, Lucan said. The early 2000s setting also shaped the production. Lucan said the crew had to think carefully about props, vehicles, sets, and technology to avoid making the period feel either too modern or too exaggerated. You don't want to make it cartoonish, Lucan said. Garcia had long wanted to shoot anywhere on film, and the project was shot primarily on Kodak 16mm film using a Bolex camera, a choice that gave the film the texture Garcia wanted, but also created technical limits. Director of photography Colwyn Fishbach said he and Garcia wanted the visual style to reflect the story's early 2000s setting and memory-like tone. Joe and I are both really big proponents of shooting analog with the texture and the grain of film, Fishbach said. The Bolex camera gave the crew about 24 seconds of usable continuous film before it began to slow down, Fishbach said. That forced each shot to be carefully planned. There were maybe four shots that we were kind of forced to do, digital, just because of the way that Joe wanted to have the actors perform, and he really wanted those scenes to breathe a little bit, Fishbach said. But every chance that we had to shoot on film, we did on film. Lucan described shooting on film as a whole entirely different beast. It legitimately had a huge effect on us, from the shots to the lighting to making sure we had enough light, Lucan said. Every shot you had to do within a certain amount of time. For Fishbach, who's from the Ann Arbor, Michigan area, Central Illinois offered a landscape he wanted to treat with care. He said the region's flat cornfields, skyscapes, architecture, and lived-in quality helped shape the film. It's a beautiful landscape and one that deserves to be on film and shown to the world, Fishbach said. He said the film carries a sense of longing, the feeling of wanting to leave a small town while also recognizing it as home. In a lot of ways, I think it's sort of this love letter to the area, Fishbach said. Garcia also worked with several local and non-professional actors, an approach that brought challenges but helped the film feel more grounded, he said. Lucan said non-actors can bring fresh instincts to a project because they are not working from stage or commercial habits. Garcia said he wants people from places like Hartsburg, Lincoln, and Clinton to recognize something familiar in the film. For sure, parts of themselves, Garcia said, that's a story that I can relate to. That my neighbors, my classmates, this is a story that we all know that is maybe now finally reflected on the big screen. Lucan said the film feels especially relevant in Lincoln, where residents have seen the closure of Lincoln College and other local institutions in recent years. I think it helps express a feeling that many people do feel of kind of wanting to get out and do more, Lucan said, but also people love the town of Lincoln. For Garcia and his collaborators, Anywhere is also a statement about independent filmmaking in Central Illinois. Lucan said people sometimes underestimate the planning, skill, and effort required to make films outside larger production centers. Fishbach said he hopes audiences leave the film with a similar understanding. Independent film and local film and local art is not dead, Fishbach said. There are people out here making incredible things without a whole lot of resources. For Garcia, the Arlie screening is a chance to bring the film back to the people and places that made it possible. After that, Anywhere will continue through the festival process, where Garcia hopes the story can travel beyond central Illinois while remaining rooted in the place that shaped it. You can find more information about Anywhere and Garcia Productions on Facebook at fb.com/Garcia Productions Film. Homicide witness, sad scene. The murder trial for Tommy Yale M. Anderson, who's accused of fatally shooting a teenager in 2022 on Mill Street in Bloomington, is ramping up this week, with testimony from witnesses placing the key players at the scene. Anderson, 22, of Hampton, Georgia, is charged with first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, and aggravated discharge of a firearm in the shooting death of 17-year-old Kanye Muzzy Stowers. Anderson has pleaded not guilty to the charges. If convicted, Anderson could face 20 to 60 years in prison, but he would be eligible for more time if the jury finds that he used a firearm to kill Stowers, Judge Jason Chambers said. Anderson had previously been scheduled for a jury trial to begin in May, but proceedings were postponed after prosecutors were unable to locate a key witness. A 12-person jury was sworn in on Friday. The defendant appeared Monday morning for opening statements with Assistant State's Attorneys Aaron Frederick and Alexandra Williams serving as the state's prosecutors, and attorney Jennifer Patton representing Anderson. Anderson is accused of fatally shooting Stowers late on April 8, 2022, in front of a residence in the 400 block of East Mill Street in Bloomington. And during testimony on Monday, two witnesses placed both Anderson and Stowers at the scene. Stowers was pronounced dead at the scene after midnight. The McLean County Coroner's Office determined that he died from a single gunshot wound. Multiple witnesses reported seeing Anderson getting out of a vehicle prior to the shooting, prosecutors said at Anderson's detention hearing in January 2024. Anderson was indicted by a McLean County grand jury on December 20, 2023, and was taken into custody a week later by the U.S. Marshals Service in Chicago. He has been in McLean County custody since his detention hearing. Several states' witnesses took the stand Monday, sharing varying versions of what happened on the April evening when a group of 10 to 20 people gathered at the Mill Street home for a party. The witnesses, who said they were teenagers at the time of Stowers' death, testified about the party. Several described it as a relatively small get-together where the teens drank, smoked, and hung out. Kanye was sweet, kind, loving, one witness said, a breath of fresh air, a sweetheart, creative. None recalled any arguments that night, and several of them described Stowers as a friend. But after partygoers heard two or so gunshots coming from outside, the fun night changed, they said. Stowers was found outside on the front porch of the home with apparent gunshot wounds. Witnesses testified Monday that Stowers had arrived at the party with another young man who one witness described as the victim's best friend. Another witness testified she saw Muzzy, a nickname for Stowers, and his best friend with guns at the party. However, when that friend was brought to the stand, he said neither he nor Stowers had guns that night. The witnesses said they had mostly known each other before the party, but several of the witnesses spoke of a group of unfamiliar people who came by that night. The group was described as comprising white and black men, all wearing black clothes with masks. Witnesses said the masks covered the majority of the men's faces, leaving the eyes exposed like a ski mask. One witness said he and the others were inside when they heard two gunshots. One bullet had gone in through the wall into the residence, passing his leg, he said. He said he and another witness went outside after the gunshots stopped and they discovered Stowers had been shot. Police lights could be seen in the distance, he added. The other witnesses, who others said had gone out and discovered the body, also testified Monday, but he said he didn't see the body until after Bloomington police officers got to the home and brought him outside. One witness said she recalled seeing that man go outside and discover the body. After she heard Stowers had been shot, she also went outside to see him, she said. The woman cried on the stand while describing Stowers' injuries. His whole face was blown off, she said. She described Stowers as a friend. None of the partygoers testified about whether Anderson and Stowers knew each other. More of the state's witnesses were expected to take the stand. Today's Flick Fact Question. The Tasty Crab is a Cajun seafood restaurant at 706 South El Dorado in Bloomington, and also perhaps the site of more restaurants than any other address in Bloomington Normal. Do you know what other restaurants have been at that site? And the answer is, before the Tasty Crab, it was a Carver's, Mountain Jack's, Smiling Moose, China Buffet, Lucky Garden, and originally a Bonanza Steakhouse that opened in 1977 and was there until 1993. From the past pages of the Pantograph, how time flies locally. 100 years ago, August 12th, 1926. Miller Park was a popular place yesterday, one of the hottest days of the late summer. With the thermometer hugging 96, over 700 tickets were sold to the bathers, and the waters of the lake were dotted with human beings, young and old, trying to keep cool from early in the afternoon until 8:45 p.m. 75 years ago, August 12th, 1951. Mrs. Allen Allers of Route 150 has a table she and her husband fixed over. The table was first used by Mrs. Allers' grandmother when she was first married. They have sanded it and repainted it a light green, and when guests come to visit, they autograph the table. 50 years ago, August 12th, 1976. An objection was lodged August 11th in an attempt to stop construction of a branch bank by People's Bank of Bloomington. The objection was lodged by Prairie State Bank. People's Bank has plans to build a branch at the southeast corner of Washington Street and Rust Road. And 25 years ago today, August 12th, 2001, civil rights leader Harry Hightower, who died of a heart attack on August 11th at his home, is being remembered by family and friends as a true gentleman who was persistent in the pursuit of human justice. Hightower of Bloomington was 59. He was a wonderful man and gave so much to the community, particularly in the area of human relations, said Normal Mayor Kant Carricker, who last year gave Hightower the Outstanding Community Service Award for Hightower's long service on the Normal Human Relations Commission. Setting it right, Bloomington Election Commission. Former Bloomington Election Commissioner Diana Howman resigned from the board following a citizen complaint. A story that appeared on page A2 of the Tuesday edition of the Pantograph and online misidentified her former role. Audit, Mental Health Fund, okay. An audit of the McLean County Mental Health and Public Safety Fund's schedule of expenditures and transfers over the last 10 years revealed no unusual transactions or significant misstatements. During McLean County Executive Committee meeting on Monday, Brian Mateus, signing director for Clifton Larson Allen, provided an overview of the firm's findings and clarified up front that this was an audit of financial schedules and not a full set of financial statements. In 2016, an intergovernmental agreement between McLean County, the City of Bloomington, and the Town of Normal was approved to identify deficiencies in the community's behavioral health systems and the growing impact of mental health on the criminal justice system. Bloomington and Normal agreed to commit a portion of their home rule sales tax revenues into the established fund for mental health and public safety purposes. Because of concerns about the fund's $20 million fund balance after 10 years of operation, all three governing bodies agreed to amend the agreement to suspend revenue sharing for 3 months. McLean County Chair Elizabeth Johnston said one concern from the public was there was substantial funds that seemingly were not earmarked for anything. However, there are substantial obligations for the rest of the contract. At the end of 2024, the fund had a balance of $19.4 million. However, the audit showed that there was still about $66.4 million in remaining obligations throughout the life of the agreement. $11 million in debt service relating to the McLean County Law and Justice Center detention facilities, about $17.7 million in criminal justice services, about $18.9 million in behavioral health initiatives, and about $18.8 million for an integrated case management system. This roughly $47 million deficit is expected to be covered by future sales tax revenue collected through the remaining term of the agreement. Johnston also asked why there were contractual obligations for things like criminal justice, but none for community projects. Mateus clarified that community project obligations are scheduled a year in advance. As much as we would like to continue doing those projects, it does mean that that would be even more substantial obligations to the community moving forward for the remainder of this contract, Johnston said. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half of the Pantograph for August 12th, 2026. Please stay tuned.